Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bases Loaded. Bases Loaded is a fantasy baseball podcast, and I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. And today, it's episode 51. We are moving along in this offseason. I'm joined by George. You can follow him on Twitter at JMontanez90. George, another podcast just me and you, buddy.
Here we are, episode 50 and 51. Man, I'm just, it's a Monday morning and I'm not at work, so I'm happy. So yeah, happy Veterans Day.
Yeah, definitely. Happy Veterans Day. What better than to talk about baseball, man? You know, it's, in all seriousness though, thank you to all our veterans. We do appreciate all your service and everything you do for us. That should go without saying, but there really just truly is never enough thanks put out there for them. So
yeah, absolutely.
But we're celebrating Veterans Day today. Obviously giving thanks and talking baseball. Today, this is where we finally transition from our team previews to a divisional breakdown. Right. Now, we're still going to talk about every team in that division to a point. We're going to highlight some sleepers, breakouts, and busts that we can see from maybe not necessarily every team, but in general from that division. But the idea is to kind of bring five episodes into one. We're not going to talk for 3 hours, don't get me wrong. But it's going to be a solid episode filled with information, and this is a way to – because otherwise, let's be honest, people don't want to just hear podcasts about one specific team. It's kind of like it's the feedback I'm getting. So this is our way of pivoting to where we're still covering every team, just cutting down the amount of like episodes. We're doing it one episode versus five. So
yeah, this really is a great way to do it. And we're still like taking a look at every team. So like, you know, not really missing much. Yeah, so I'm ready to get into this NL West today.
Exactly. NL West, you said it first. And we're doing NL West because I knew I was going to have you on, and it has your team, the San Francisco Giants. So, actually, right before we get started, a quick reminder, hit us up with a 5-star rating review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us if it allows. We greatly appreciate it. It really helps us grow, and it helps get the word out there. I wish I knew the exact how it works, but I know it works. It helps us out. And, of course, every podcast, it's a reminder that we do have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/fantasybaseball. And we have everything from as simple as a Discord chat to actual draft services. You know, we do rankings just for your league format. We do hitting charts, pitching charts. We offer a whole bunch of stuff. It's worth checking out. And again, that's at patreon.com/fantasybaseball. All right, now let's go ahead and get to it. We're just going to jump right in, and we'll start with the Giants. Now, yeah, I'll just start with Buster Posey because we already spoke on him pretty much. We can both agree it's empty batting average, maybe 10 home run upside, but yeah, whatever. Catcher is what it is, so he's a fallback option at best, but limited upside. But as far as the roster lays out, is there anybody sleeper breakout buster in general that kind of piques your interest at all? I mean, kind of a meh lineup.
This Giants team is just – a team that is in such, you know, they're in a weird state right now where, you know, they're probably not going to be competitive for another 3 or 4 years, realistically. So like, they're building up that farm system, but they've just got so many pieces that they're not going to be able to move, like Evan Longoria, Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, you know, Buster Posey. So this, you know, we're looking like at another really bad year for the Giants, you know, realistically. They did, you know, go on a little bit of that hot stretch in the middle of the season. Had they not, you know, you think like maybe would they have been able to move to, you know, a few more pieces? Would they have been able to get something from Madison Bumgarner or Will Smith? But, I mean, it is what it is. Those guys are likely moving on. Now, as far as like what's left here on the team, you know, one guy who they were actually able to acquire is for Pomerantz was Mauricio Dubon. Now he's you know, second base, shortstop. You know, he's a middle infielder, and he actually did pretty well. He had 4 home runs and 3 steals. Hit .274 with the team in 30 games. And Steamer likes him. Steamer's really, really high on Dubon, projecting him for 14 home runs and 13 steals with the .266 average. So, you know, not too bad. You know, 14 and 13, .266. That's a, you know, decent. Could be a decent middle infield option in like roto leagues.
Yeah, he was actually the name that I was right away intrigued by because he offers a little power and speed. Now, the speed itself is a little – I mean, I'm just curious, a little questioning it slightly, only because he has a sprint speed in the 60th percentile. So, obviously, it's not like blazing speed. But he has – I'm pretty sure I'm looking at it now. Yeah, he's – oh, yeah, he has a 31 steal season in the minors, and he's stolen pretty much double digits at every stop. So – I think the Steamer projections of 14 and 13 seem fair. I mean, maybe the home runs, he could really realistically only put up 10. Like, the power didn't show up until last year in AAA. We all know the ball that they were using last year. So,
exactly. Yeah, so he had 16 home runs in AAA and then came up and hit 4 in the majors.
Yeah, so that's 20.
So 14, right. 14 might be a little aggressive, you know, if we're not looking at the same baseball being used next season.
And that's why I mentioned, you know, I made sure to mention that because, but other than that, I mean, late speed and batting average appears to be there. And I'm surprised at the batting average being so high because if you look at, you know, the XBA was like around 258, I think it was. I just looked it up not too long ago. And when you look at his profile, you see a chase rate. And let's say league average last year, or in 2019, I should say, was 31.6. His was 46.3. We're talking like absurdly high chase rate. That's probably like Mondesi high. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the crazy part was his swinging strike rate was only 10.1%, which was actually a full percentage point better than league average. So when he swings, he doesn't miss a lot, and that shows in actually his contact percentage. I think his contact percentage being, well, let's see, league average is 76.2%, and he's sitting
at
82.3%. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, what is that, 4, 5, 6, about 6.1% difference, actually. Not about that, is the difference. So the high contact profile is why he can get away with chasing so much, because he makes contact across the board at a solid above average rate too at that. So it makes up for the chase rate and will keep his K rate slightly lower, but he's not going to walk a lot. So OBP leagues, points leagues, he's a hard, you know, pass for me. But overall, again, we're talking a later option. And he's somebody like someone, he almost fits that sleeper category. He's definitely somebody you should go out and get, though, if you're targeting, you know, steals and batting average late, which the more we do these, by the way, the more I'm finding speed and batting average guys late. Like, it's becoming more, it's just you have to build for those because they hurt you in power categories.
Yeah, exactly.
And we all know power is a little harder to come by because everybody, you have to keep up with everybody with how power has kind of exploded over the years. So this is a guy where you have to build in, like, I'm all for taking power early and waiting on the speed, because the speed itself, like, you can find speed and batting average a little later, it seems like. I mean, maybe I'm being a little too optimistic with my assessment with some of these guys, to be honest. But the more I see, I'm just seeing more and more of them personally. So,
yeah, for sure. Now, Steamer does have him projected for 134 games. You know, I just don't see anyone on that roster that should be like, there's no reason why Dubon shouldn't be playing every day for the Giants. So, I mean, if we, you know, if 134 was it? Yeah. 134 is a little conservative. If you give them maybe another 15 to 20 games. Yeah. We're probably looking at some good, very good value for roto leagues.
Yeah. I was just looking at the roster resource page as well. And I don't see what would be really stopping them. Like, I don't get it either.
Right. So, I mean, and Dubon is someone I like. Other than Dubon, you've got someone like Kevin Pillar.
Every year he does this. Stop it.
Yeah.
Every year he's a late round grab, offers a little bit, like, he goes through hot stretches where, like, oh, maybe he figured it out. A little bit of power, a little bit of speed, and it's just like, meh. He's, you know what he is? He's Adam Eaton. With less batting average.
But, yeah, I mean, you know what you're going to get, essentially. Yeah, so, like, the last 3 seasons, He went 16 home runs, 15 steals, and then in 2018, he went 15 and 14, and then last year, you know, power was up everywhere. He went 21 and 14 steals. So you know what you're gonna get. I wrote it down on my notes here. He's, you know, a solid like fifth outfielder in roto leagues. You know, give you double digits in home runs and steals. Not gonna help you in batting average, but you know how badly everyone needs speed.
Exactly. He'll be owned in a lot of leagues for sure. This roster is littered with like late round flyers as far as like need based.
Exactly.
Let's see. You have Mike Yastrzemski, which we looked at a little bit off the air. We were talking about him. And ultimately, there's some upside there, but mostly in the power department. I mean, him and Alex Dickerson are both like 20 to 25 home run guys, 250 to 270 batting average. Now, 270, I feel like, is their ceiling. I know Yaz did. I have to look up Alex real quick, Dickerson. But yeah, they both hit 270 or 275 last year, but they both had, Yaz had a 256 or something like that expected batting average, slightly overproducing speed skill. There's not enough sprint speed there to suggest that he can sustain being so much higher than that batting average. But Alex Dickerson actually had an expected batting average right in line with his actual. So if you're looking for a little bit of pop late in drafts, fifth outfielder utility type, those guys might have it. Those are deeper league guys. Like, I don't see them being real 12 team mixed type of guys, right? Personally.
Yeah.
Other than that, man, I think as far as the hitters go, that's pretty much it. I don't see much role. I mean, should we run down the roster as it currently sits right now, 1 through 8 for hitters. It's Yaz leading off, Posey's hitting second, Brandon Belt. Every year it's the same thing with him as well. There's always guys high on him in the industry. I'm just, between the concussions and other stuff, I'm kind of, and that feel, that where he plays, you know, that's not really lefty friendly. So you have Evan Longoria hitting cleanup, same idea, kind of whatever, not really a guy I want. There's no upside there anymore.
Yeah.
Alex Dickerson, Kevin Pillar, we mentioned, Brandon Crawford, another guy that's just whatever, and Dubon. Of all those guys I just mentioned, and I speak so fast, people who try to listen to podcasts at 1.5 speed have to slow down for me. Of those names, though, which one are you with me that Dubon's like the most exciting and the most upside, it feels like?
Yeah, 100%. Dubon's the one that stands out. He's the one that I'm most excited for. The rest of these guys, like I said, like, you're looking at all these aging veterans in Posey, Belt, Longoria, Crawford. I just don't see any value there at all, really, from any of them. Yeah, absolutely, Dubon. Now, they are going to move the bullpen to the outfield. So, you know, I'm not sure how much that's going to change the dimensions, but it looks like they're probably going to move in, you know, Triples Valley. And, man, I can't even begin to tell you how many times over the years I've seen Brandon Belt hit a ball that just dies in Triples Valley, you know, for an out. So, I mean, we'll see how that changes things. We'll see how much the dimensions change and how much that'll offset that. But, I mean, yeah, there's not really much else to say about the lineup.
I do like I think there's a lot of interesting pitchers on this roster as far as fantasy goes. Cueto, didn't he come back and flash a little something at the end, giving you a little bit of false advertisement, false hope coming into this year, late round flyer. Samardzija, solid for quality start leagues, and he pitched pretty decent last year.
Beating right, yeah.
These moments, like, you guys have, I think pitching is where it's actually kind of, there's a fantasy value to be had here.
Yeah, so I mean, Samardzija actually, he did have a really, actually surprisingly good year. In 181 innings, he had a 3.52 ERA. The thing is, I mean, it came with a 4.59 FIP and 5.02 xFIP. So exactly. I mean, he just got so lucky.
What was his strand rate? Probably like 80%, I'm guessing, 80 plus.
76.9% strand rate.
I expected it to be a little higher with all the indicators, being so much higher as well. But it's interesting. I haven't looked into him as deeply as I should have. I should, to be honest. But
yeah, so I'll be off of Samardzija this season. I was kind of on him coming into 2019, and it kind of worked out. But I mean, as you can see, the numbers here say that it was really lucky. You know, and then,
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to move on to a couple of the other pitchers here. I know Tyler Beede was kind of up and down throughout the season.
I'm not interested.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So these guys, most of these guys are probably going to go undrafted in, you know, your standard 10 to 12 mixed leagues.
I was just, definitely. These guys are 15 team and deeper. Logan Webb, I was looking at a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was really high on him coming out of the minors because he was flashing, you know, as high as like 10.23 K per nine in Double A last year or 2019. Then he had a 9.0 K per nine in Triple A, but that was like one start. And then he came up and he walked more than at any point last year. He struck out less, and he's another guy with like a little bit of positive regression might be noted. His ERA was 5.22, FIP of 4.12, xFIP of 3.89, and a strand rate of only 65.4%. And league average is like I think 72 to 75-ish. I think is league average. I'd have to check that, but. I mean, there's some and also Sierra was 4.45, so nothing like crazy good, nothing really. It's just maybe I'm still a little optimistic because he flashed it in the minors, and I feel like there's a little more upside. Now, even his O swing and swing strike rates were below league average, and I just feel like there could be more there. I mean, he flashed the K upside in the minors, maybe getting a full offseason and a full spring training, there's something there, but. Just somebody that ultimately, like you said, he's going to be great for sure. I wish Mike was on because he's a streamer type. I think he's going to be, you're going to see Mike recommending streaming him at times this year. Good home ballpark, you know, maybe against a weak lineup, he could be a good streamer type.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you mentioned, most of these guys are going to be streamer types. One guy they picked up, Tyler Anderson, they claimed from the Rockies, obviously, great transition, you know, from ballparks. From Coors. Yeah. And Steamer actually really likes Tyler Anderson. They have him for 146 innings with a 4.06 ERA and 8.7 K per nine. I mean, that's not too bad. He's definitely going to be usable if that's what they're giving him.
I thought Cueto was projected to be better, but I'm not seeing anything about it. I probably should have looked. I'm curious about his velocity, but Cueto's just on name value alone will go late in drafts. Just in case things. I remember him having. I thought he had a couple solid outings. Maybe I was wrong. I must have been mistaken because I'm looking at his stats and they were not pretty at all. Yeah. So I thought he flashed. I swear he flashed a solid start before the end of the season. Maybe. Regardless, I mean, meh.
Man. We'll see. You know, it'll be an off season, a whole off season for him off of the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, but he's also 33 years old. And
exactly.
I don't know. The K per nine hasn't been there in a few years, actually.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So of these guys, of the starting five that they currently have on Roster Resource, and, you know, we've yet to see what they do in the off season, but of these guys, I'm actually probably most interested in seeing what Tyler Anderson can do in that ballpark. Now moving over to the bullpen, this is another situation that's going to be up in the air, regarding Will Smith. They did give him the qualifying offer. He's probably, I mean, at $17 million for Will Smith.
That's hard to pass up at his age too. I think he's like what, 30 something, 31 maybe. He's not old.
Yeah, he's like 31. Mm-hmm.
That's not old, but that's a lot of money to pass up on, you know? And on top of that, someone would have to give up the draft pick incentive, like the draft pick for him. And I just don't know. He could be a tough one to gauge how that goes. I'm curious to see if he takes it. Because if he does, he's the closer, no questions.
Absolutely.
But if he doesn't, who would you peg as the closer?
So if he doesn't, so they have Sean Anderson, who did close a few games last season. They've got Tony Watson, who, you know, has closed before. But one guy who I'm actually really excited about, seeing this season, probably right behind Dubon, is Melvin Adon. Melvin Adon is he was a closer in Double A last season for the Giants affiliate. Saved 14 games, had 11.8 K per nine, 2.6 ERA, and he's got an 80 grade fastball. He throws 100 miles an hour. So Melvin Adon is someone to keep an eye on, see if they'll call him up. He's 25, so you know it's just about that time. See what he could bring to the organization, and Melvin Adon, he's someone that I'm excited about watching in that bullpen.
Whatever happened to Reyes Maranta?
Oh man,
remember that? We loved him last year.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's not the case anymore. So beyond that, I think that's going to cover the Giants, and we talked about them more than I anticipated anyway, so it works. Let's go ahead and transition over to, why not, the Padres. Actually, real quick, Mad Bum, we both know he's not going to re-sign there or take the qualifying offer. I doubt that he goes back. He's not going to end up there, right?
No, I doubt it. And I don't see a reason why the Giants in this stage would probably do that. I mean, like I said, they're 3 or 4 years away from really competing again. They're building up that farm system. Yeah, I just don't see it.
I don't either. And I honestly have no interest in him because I have a feeling he's going to go. I feel like the Phillies or something stupid are going to go get him. And it's going to be like Arrieta 2.0. And I'm already pretty low on Mad Bum. And the peripheral, if you actually look at his home and road splits, he was far worse on the road. And that makes sense with such a great home park in San Fran. So if he goes to a place that isn't so, you know, friendly to home, as a home park type of thing, that I'm going to likely just be avoiding him in general anyway. So,
yeah.
San Diego Padres. I hope they land one of Cole or Strasburg. And you're hearing that there's a chance that he actually lands there, you know? Like, they're talking about, like, I saw something about the Padres being, like, a strong – not strong favorite. Favorite's not the word, but, like, they're strongly considering it or something, which makes sense because of Cole – like, that team is on the brink between what's in the farm system and between what's on the roster. I think they could legitimately – they're an ace or two – they're an ace or a couple pitchers away. I mean, a team has it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they look like they're a team that's ready to just, you know, put everything down and go for it. They've been building up this team, the farm system. You see the prospects, and they're right there. They're right on the cusp. So, yeah, absolutely. If they're going to be in the running for one of these top pitchers, for someone like Gerrit Cole, who, you know, he's from Southern California, so, you know, obviously he's been linked to the Angels. But if the Padres are in there, you know, I don't see a reason why they shouldn't. Go for it.
Other than obviously talking hypotheticals, I think we can actually do a whole podcast and talk about where we think these guys are going to land, because that'd be kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
But let's just start at the top here, man. There's a lot of fantasy goodness on this team. Like, I'll tell you right now, there's no interest, and our first place ranks, which we're going to talk about on another podcast, but Hosmer, no thanks. Not interested. Not even a corner infield type. I don't want him.
Yeah, no.
Just like, I just want to get that one out of the way. There's really no excitement there. No sleeper breakout or bust there at all. He's ranked appropriately, and if I miss on him, I'm fine with that. But anyway, you know, somebody who's going to be a fantasy team make-or-break type of player because of where he's going is Fernando Tatis Jr.
Absolutely.
He is so exciting, but, man, like, the back, we've seen what happens with backs. You know, you see Correa, you've seen Yelich. And although he obviously is only 20 years old, but Cray has been dealing with nagging back issues for years now, and he's only in his early 20s. I'm just afraid that might turn into something. But other than that potential, dude, the sky's the limit for this kid.
It really is. It really is. So tell me, is he a first rounder for you right now?
15 teamers, he's fringe. Mm-hmm. I haven't updated my ranks, but I'm coming around on him the more I look into him. There's a little swing. I mean, everything about him. I mean, I'm looking at his, like, StatCast page and everything, and obviously he's over – his XBA is way lower than his actual production last year, but he has 95th percentile sprint speed. So a lot of his, like, BABIP and a lot of – he's going to likely always be, like, an overachiever on batting average compared to his expected batting average.
Yeah.
And when you look at his profile – he doesn't swing. He doesn't chase a lot, which I was very surprised to find. I thought he was a little more aggressive. He swings plenty. Where is it? I gotta find it again. There it is.
Yeah, he does. It's the swing and strikes. Really, yeah, up at 15.6%. So, I mean, if he can just improve that contact rate,
that's the only thing he's lacking. Because everything else, he chases league average, which is fine.
Yeah,
his contacts across the board are below average. And if he could just improve again, and he's 20 years old, so you anticipate growth. So if he improves just putting more contact on the ball, there's literally, like, I don't see any, because if the contact improves, that means the chase rate likely improves too, because that means he's seeing the ball better. And unfortunately, sophomore slumps happen, so that does concern me. But even if he sustains this batting profile, he can still be a 260, 270 hitter if things don't go his way. And we're looking at least like 25, 35. And that's like floor. It feels like a floor. 25, 30, 25, 35. Feels like a floor. Because, I mean, he's done it in 2017, albeit in high A, 21, 29. He did 16 and 16 in 2018. And then last year, he did 22, 16.
Yeah, and that was in 84 games.
And that was 84 games. But now, again, if we're looking at less, we're looking at a less juiced ball, take away a few of those home runs. I mean, he's still 30-30. That's still like a legitimate potential for him. Or even could be a potential floor for him with a 270 batting average. That should be first round. I just have a hard – like, for me, it's like him or Rendon, him or Freeman. That's where it gets really tough. Your high floor, you know what you're getting type of guys compared to a lottery ticket. But he could very well take that next step like Acuna did. You know what I mean? It could happen. Or he could take a step back like Bellinger did in year two.
Right.
And that's where it's like risk-reward. And I think you're going to see him creep into that top 12 range for the upside. But it's like him or Jose Ramirez. Like, that's where I have a really hard decision. Because Jose Ramirez, although had a really like a down year when you look at the first half of this year and the second half of 2018.
Yeah.
You look at those, you combine them, it's one full season. But other than that, you're hoping Tatis is that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I mean.
So it's like him or Ramirez, for me it's really tough because you're hoping Tatis produces what Ramirez has produced in the past.
Yeah, yeah, now I'm not sure, you know, I mean, the well-documented slump that Jose Ramirez was on for, you know, over a year, that's going to scare some people off. Personally, I think I'd probably take Tatis first because – yeah, I mean, like you said, you're looking at probably 270 and at least 25-20, you know, as a pretty safe projection.
Steamer has him at 28-20 with a 264 average. That feels conservative.
It does.
But and that's the thing. It's like I'm just trying to balance like, – because when you look at Ramirez, even when he was slumping, the dude was stealing bases at a high – there was no denying that. He carried you in steals. Even while slumping that whole time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But that also begged the question for everyone, like, was he stealing because he was slumping?
Well, I mean, it's – I guess. I don't know. I'm just looking at, like, even while he was slumping with the counting stats and everything, he was getting – his on-base percentage and everything was not really teetering. His K rates and walk rates never really took a hit. And I feel like with somebody with that type of plate discipline – there's a high floor, and I get it. Tatis is the higher ceiling, it feels like, but is he really? Because we saw Ramirez coming around, and I think it's going to be one of those, they're going to be ranked back-to-back, and depending on how my team is, like in a 15-teamer, I might take the higher floor. In a 12-teamer, I might shoot for the ceiling. It really depends on how my team, who I get in the first round, or if I get a back-end first-round pick. Heck, I might take both of them.
Yeah, like, right.
Realistically, because I think Ramirez is a little low. I mean, I haven't really looked at consensus ranks, and we don't really have enough rankings out there. So I'm waiting. I want to see what ADP says, but I think you're going to see Tatis go ahead of him, and I'm not sure if that's necessarily wrong, but I don't know if that's the right thing either. I think it's just preference. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little higher on Ramirez than most. People are really down on him, like you said.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, the discussion has been brought up before regarding Ramirez, you know, how real his power is. So, I mean, you know, you look at the exit velocity and hard hit percentage for Ramirez, and then you look at Tatis, and you can see the difference there. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Jose Ramirez. Love him as a player. But, yeah, I think that Tatis has that ability to just take that extra step and, you know, be a league winner, even in the middle of the second round in shallow leagues or, you know, back in the first in those 15-teamers.
Yeah, we could probably spend the whole podcast arguing these two.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter, like you said, like I think there's, yeah, the ceiling is definitely higher for Tatis. And the more I look into it, if it wasn't for those like elite walk and K rates that Ramirez typically puts up, then I don't know. I'm probably going to go Tatis as well over him. Just shoot for the stars, man.
Yeah, exactly. But Ramirez, man, we could talk all day about these guys, and we could talk all day about the Padres in general, but
it's hard not to.
Right?
I guess we should move on from Tatis. So that's our feelings on him. We know there's legitimate, like, Acuna, like, ceiling type of thing, it feels like.
Right. Now, where are you on Manny Machado?
I was literally going to ask the same thing. I was literally going to ask you the same exact thing. I am, and you know I'm down on him. Like, I was down on him last year. I was like, come right before the midseason mark, I was telling people, like, Chapman or Machado rest of the season, and I had Chapman, and people were, like, really surprised about that, I guess. And I was like, right now you can actually go out with Machado's name, sell high, and get Chapman plus. And if people listened to me, they would have, other than, like, that one real big month for Machado, which happened right after I actually mentioned selling him, so go figure.
Yeah.
Other than that month, though, it's – that's what is what it is. And I actually plan on diving into him a little more. I want to get better numbers because I know outside of Camden, he's – just as a career, he's been a lot worse.
Right. Yeah. So I did look into that a little bit last night, and actually, you know, as a hitter in Camden, he has a career of .294 average, and then outside of Camden in his career, he's .270 hitter. You know, obviously we've seen last year that dive down in, you know, .256. So, I mean, that's well documented, his difference, you know, outside of Camden Yards. Now, you know, he hit 32 home runs last season with the .256 average, and where he was being drafted, you know, like in the second round, that's a pretty big disappointment, especially when you consider that 35 other hitters hit at least, you know, .256 or better, and 32 home runs. So I mean, 35 other guys were able to outproduce him.
He actually his K rate spiked back up too. Five more. It went up 5% from
last year,
from 2018.
And the speed wasn't there.
It was. I'm looking at that now, actually. I actually did look into him. For some reason, the steals weren't there, but the sprint speed actually was the same, or if not technically 0.1 better than like the season before. So I don't know why the steals weren't there, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and we've seen this. You know, we've seen this with guys who, you know, move teams and sign big contracts. We've seen this happen where, you know, they press, and we see that in their K rate. So we'll see how, you know, in year two. Now, you know, if Machado's there, say, you know,
round five.
Right. I was gonna say round four. Just, you know, off the top of my head and my gut. You know, if he's there in round four, are you on him in round four?
15-teamers, yeah.
Yeah.
12-teamers, I'm not sure, because I think there's upside still there, but I don't know, man. Like, I'm really that low on him. Steamer likes him more than I do. Steamer has him at .271. I'm trying to pull up a Statcast page, and the hard hit rate's still there. I mean, there's a lot of – maybe there's indicators that suggest, yeah, obviously he underachieved. They had expected around 10 points higher in batting average. So in 5x5 leagues, round four, round five feels right. I just think people need to understand that he's always – it's – the ceiling isn't what it was when he was in Camden. The 300 hitter that you saw and all that, I think, is kind of not really there at this point. And
yeah,
I think fourth round is fair, but I'm just wondering how much, based on name and if he has a hot spring training, how much inflation there is. And at that point, you know?
Yeah. And because I don't think he's going to be, you know, running like he did before, he's I don't think he's going to have a 20 steal season like he did with the Orioles, or even 14 steals in 2018. You know, Steamer has him for 7. I think that's going to, you know, limit that upside. I don't think that puts him into the, you know, back into like the second round.
No, not by any means. But if he can hit .270 again with 30, that, because obviously you can get power late, but getting .270 and 30 late, other than my boy JD Davis, I don't think that's going to, honestly, it's not as easy to find. So I think there's still value in a solid batting average with 30 home runs. Mm-hmm. And who knows who they sign? Maybe they bring in more RBI potential around them. You know, right now they have Cordero ahead of them. But Franchi, last I checked, isn't much of an on-base guy as much as he is just a power guy, you know?
Right. Franchi's one of those, like, physical tools, you know, toolsy guys that just hasn't put it all together, whether it be for injury or just growth, you know. So, yeah, he's just another one of those guys.
He's a power speed combo guy, and mm-hmm. Franchi's interesting. I think he's a late round flyer. I mean, I honestly didn't look enough into him initially. I looked into him more since, and there is some power speed intrigue here. like legitimately, like there's potential. Steamer has him as a 224 hitter, though. That's kind of funny. But I mean, he's flashed, you know, about he's probably going to hit around 250. 230 would be low end. I think 222 is really, 224 is really low. But there's like legitimately, I think there's legitimately like a solid, like a potential 2020 season in him. If everything goes right. Because in AAA in 2017, in 419 play appearances, he put up 17 and 15 with a 326 batting average, which I don't think the batting average is there, but everything, there's a lot of tools there, a lot of excitement. I think he's a late round flyer worth drafting in most leagues, especially if he's named a starter come opening day.
Yeah.
I think he's a fun sleeper. I think I'm adding him to sleeper lists, honestly, and I like chasing that type of upside. I like somebody that has 15-15 potential with a 250 average. Like, that's fine because that's potential. He could easily do 20-20. I mean, it depends on what if they stick with him in the starting lineup. Am I a little too bullish on him, maybe?
Yeah, the thing is, too, you know, how patient are they going to be with him? They acquired, you know, Taylor Trammell in the swap, you know, with –
yeah,
between the Reds and the Indians, yeah, that trade. So they acquired, you know, Taylor Trammell. They still have, you know, Will Myers in the outfield, Manny Margot, you know, Hunter Renfro. So, you know, I don't think they're, you know, he's probably not going to have that long of a leash.
And he's probably he might not even play every day initially either. I get that. Right. I just think, and he's a deeper league name, probably outside top 300s in ADP, and I just think there's just some appeal there. And again, especially if he starts off the season as a starter and gets every day at bats, he's somebody that I could see week one waiver wire as a must add. Like, I could see that. Or he's on the most drop list come week one. There's literally all those outcomes are potential. But I think he's definitely worth grabbing with a last round pick in most drafts. Not 10 teamers, maybe fringe 12 teamer, but definitely 15 teamers. I think he's a late round guy for sure. Renfro kind of is who he is at this point. Middling batting average at best, big power potential. Will Myers, I got burned by him last year, but his draft price is another guy. Power speed combo late in drafts. Why not?
Yeah.
I'm not slapping a super tag on him. I'm over him. He broke my heart last year because I was like super big on him. Luis Urias, solid middle infield option late in drafts. I don't feel the need to break these guys down because Luis Urias, although he showed that power last year in the minors, it didn't really translate so well to the majors.
No, it didn't.
And if the ball loses any juice, he's almost like a safe, solid batting average fluffer at the end of drafts in deeper leagues. Mixed leagues, like 12-team mixers, meh. If he shows any type of growth in spring training, then yeah, he'll be like a late round guy as well. So, but overall, the team's just solid. We talked about Mejia on the catcher, the catchers.
Yeah,
we think that if he slots in that lineup where he's slotting, there's a lot of potential there. I think the six hole for Mejia, there's a lot of RBI potential, a lot of, you know, just and a lot of lineup protection. I like that a lot in a catcher, and I'm not going to break it down. If people want to hear our thoughts on him more, I would recommend going back to the catcher preview. But I'm just trying to get through some of these other, you know, middling guys that I don't. If you differ from me, please speak up. I just feel like we kind of know the rest of them. Machado's the hot topic we talked about. Tatis is a hot topic. Cordero, I probably spent more time on. Hosmer, again, I think your rankings were similar to mine on him with first base. No real interest. Kind of like a, oops, I passed on first base way too long type of guy.
Yeah. If anything, he's probably like, you know, a plug-in at utility, you know, if you really need somebody.
Exactly. And that's kind of it. Again, there's a lot of excitement here. Will Myers and Cordero late. I think Will Myers first I would take, obviously, because there's more of a sure thing with playing time. But Cordero, if this roster resource page, because roster resource has Cordero slotting in the two hole, I want him more because he's going to be cheaper, but he offers the same type of upside as Will Myers, but he's hitting second. There's more potential there than Will Myers hitting eighth or seventh. So – but the pitching side of things is where I really get excited for this team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Again, I think they signed one of Strasburg or Cole. I really do. I think they make a good run at them, get one of them. Paddock, Garrett Richards, Denelson Lamet. Luke Casey to a lesser extent, and Quantrill are okay.
Uh-huh.
Quantrill, I always say his name wrong. Cal Quantrill. they're okay. They're whatever. But dude, they have, and then they have Mackenzie Gore that might come up at one point this year. They have, where is it? They have a whole bunch of guys that are awesome.
Yeah, Luis Patino.
Whatever happened to Josh Naylor? Just thinking about minor leaguers. Sorry.
Right.
Adrian Morjon, Michael Baez. Like, this is loaded. These are AAA guys, too. Just loaded pitchers, man.
Just one. Yeah.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah, we could, you know, potentially see someone like Gore or Patino come up late in the season. Or I'm kind of expecting more, like 2021. But, on the pitching side, as exciting as the hitters are, I mean, I'm really excited about some of these pitchers. Chris Paddock, I'm really excited about what he can do this next season without any limitations. I mean, it was very – I mean, they weren't letting him go over 90 pitches, you know, most starts, and he was only pitching
– I would say he still didn't even need it. He was still getting quality starts with 90 pitches. It was impressive.
Right, yeah. So he was very limited. He was limited only 140 innings. Like I said, his outings were, you know, really efficient in only, you know, 80 to 90 pitches. He was putting up, you know, quality starts. Now, you got to think, like, if you know that you're on a pitch count and you know you're being limited, you know, is there some pressure there to try to get the most out of it? And like, you know, just the whole dynamic, you know, what Paddock can do without limitations. For me right now, sorry about that. Someone driving through the neighborhood here. But just, you know, without limitations, what he can do, you know, that potential right now, I have him right around top 20. I think he can make a big jump this next season. So I think, you know, Paddock is going to be someone I'm all over.
Paddock, now would you put Paddock top 20 or fringe? Like, he's close to that top 20 in SPs. He's very close. Like, I'm having a hard time. I'm taking him over Kluber and Carrasco for upside, but then it becomes like, I'm really high on Woodruff, so it's like between him and Woodruff for me. And then there's Ohtani there. I think Ohtani on a per game basis could be better, but who knows? He's come off TJ. So we saw Paddock burn out a little bit last year. That's why the numbers kind of slacked off towards the end. Paddock as a whole slowed down at the end of the last season, and the numbers showed it. I think it showed in the numbers, and I think it was just him getting tired because it was his first real full year. And I think this year, I don't expect any limitations. I don't expect any type of cut, like a line where a line in the sand type of thing. Where I just don't know, but I think the upside is there. I think it's solid. I don't know, man. Where would you have you made your ranks that far yet? And if so, roughly where is he at?
Right, so I haven't really made my full rankings, but I anticipate him being like right around 20. And Woodruff was a guy that you brought up that is really interesting to me too, because I love Brandon Woodruff. I'm going to have them kind of back to back, and I think I'm going to have Paddock probably one spot ahead of Woodruff.
I think I have Woodruff one spot ahead of him. But I want to say I might change it because Paddock has the greater arsenal and the better home park. And that's the type of thing that plays into a – when I'm that close on guys, that's the type of stuff I'd look at for tiebreakers. So, Denelson Lamet, I think, has slowly become everyone's sleeper. Like, no one's sleeping on him anymore.
He's right.
Moving up ranks, and it's getting to a point where he's getting priced out almost, depending on who you draft with. I know guys that have him, like, in the top 30. And I'm like, oof. Because he's shown growth all over the place last year, man.
Yeah, you know what? Initially, you know, when I hear about Lamet, I thought like, man, you know, he's going to be one of these helium guys. He's going to be, you know, next year's Nick Pavetta. But the more I look into Lamet, I might be jumping on that train too.
Oh, you're not alone, man. You really are not alone. It is everywhere.
Yeah. I don't know how high I'm going to be willing to take him. He's looking right now, like, for sure, he's going to be like a top 150 pick.
Well, yeah, I think he's going to be a fringe top 100 pick, and that's where it gets very interesting.
Right, yeah. Top 100? I mean, now we're looking at guys like Jose Barrios right in that range.
But see, I'm not a Jose Barrios guy, so it's like I might like Lamet more. Here, I've been honestly buying time. I pulled up the tweet I put out a month ago at this point, and if you look at the changes from 17 to 19, because 18 he lost to injury, his velo was up. His velo across the board was up. He changed his pitch arsenal, and he had 14% increase in usage of his sinker.
Yeah,
he had a just about a 20% decrease in his four-seam usage. His K per nine went up, his walks per nine went down, strand rate went up, and he had increase in O swing and swinging strike rate. Just everything's pointing to growth, and just I think this is the breakout year.
And yeah.
And it's just, but the problem is I'm not the only one thinking this. I'm not the only one seeing this. It has become such a common thought that there's almost no value in him. Now, if you're in drafts where he falls, like, I want him. He's going to be fringe top 30 for me. And if I can get him at that price, that's great. But I will not reach on him because I don't reach on people. We'll get into draft philosophy later in the offseason. But he's going to be in a tier. And that's the thing. People are going to take him at the top of that tier where I don't have him necessarily at the top of the tier. So I think he's going to help be part of what pushes solid value down. So
to me, yeah. Yeah. Now he might be someone that's not really known in, like, you know, your regular, like, home leagues and work leagues and stuff. So, like, but if you're drafting, like, with, you know, if I'm drafting with you, I know that, I'm going to have to, you know, be mindful of where he's going to go. But I mean, you look at his, like, Steamer loves him. You know, they have him at a 3.75 ERA next season, 11.34 K per nine. So, and then not only that, I was also looking into his arsenal a little bit as well. And that curve, you know, he really started using that curve too this last season, that he got a 48.3% whiff rate. That's just beautiful, you know?
And then see, like, I don't think this is a hot take or it shouldn't be, but I think you're going to see ADP suggest otherwise. I'd rather have Lamet over Soroka.
I think Lamet has more upside. Yeah, you could absolutely make that argument because Soroka,
he's almost, you know, like Greinke light.
Exactly. Yeah, Greinke. You know, someone mentioned Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that tweet. I did see that tweet or something like that too, and that felt like a good comp.
It did. Yeah.
With more upside, so though.
Yeah, so he feels like, you know, he's going to be safe. What I like about Soroka is that ground ball rate. He's a solid pitcher for sure, but don't
think better in points leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to get quality starts. He's going to have a decent ERA. Could maybe, you know, possibly have like maybe 8 or 9 K per nine. That might even be a little too high. But yeah, I could absolutely see that argument made for Lamet absolutely having the higher upside. You know, even his Statcast data, like, it's all in the red there. You know, so everything's pointing towards good things for, you know, coming for Denelson Lamet.
I don't know what to expect with Garrett Richards for this year.
Yeah, neither do I.
I feel like he's always been a guy where people want him. People, like, and he's always been one of the, almost like he, like, rest in peace, Tyler Skaggs, but I feel like him and Skaggs were very similar as far as, like, they always had the ceiling, but just always would come up short in expectations. It would drive me nuts.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean,
that, for some reason, that's the name that popped into my head when I thought about him.
Yeah, he's another one of those guys that just something always happens, you know, injury-wise. Yeah, he hasn't really pitched, you know, since 2015, yeah.
2015 was his he pitched in 2018. He had 18 games started. But I'm talking about as far as, like, a full season was – his last full season was 2015. And right. He had, like, an elite year, or close to, obviously, like, a really good year. And 2014 was also a really good year. So I lied. So maybe not Skaggs. Skaggs was a bad example. Skaggs had always had the ceiling. Richards actually put it up, you know, actually produced like it. Mm-hmm. But regardless, man, I mean, we're talking about a guy that you can get late in drafts, and he might be worth just taking an upside flyer on SP5. I mean, he could be a bench pitcher. You just see how he does first few starts and cut bait, or you might have found yourself like a solid little value there. You know, he's a sleeper. I'd say he fits the sleeper category.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, good home park, decent offense. What's not like? You know, faces the Giants. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you stream against the Giants and you got an all-star, you know?
That's exactly what I'm getting at. And again, he has – but that division's tougher than it looks. People, I mean, we talked about the Giants even. You know, we saw them in spurts do it. And the Padres technically have one of the weaker lineups, which is crazy. And I would say the Rockies away from Coors. That's the thing. I'm looking at the Rockies. The Rockies are never really great. Like, they're known for their home road splits. And we'll see how they address that this year. Their team's not bad, but when they're away from Colorado, they all underperform usually. I think we took that's kind of transitions right into the Rockies. I don't know if there's anything else. I mean, Kirby Yates as a closer, he's a top three closer, probably consensus number one right now. So
yeah, I mean, I think people are probably still going to be drafting Hader or like maybe Chapman over him.
Sorry. I forgot about Hader. Hader did slip my mind. So he's a consensus top three, period.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Top three.
Maybe Munoz steals the job if Kirby, if Yates for some reason falters. I don't see why he would, but that would be the next guy up.
Yeah, so Andrés Muñoz, who's probably one of the better, sleepers in waiting, closers in waiting. If they decide to move on from Yates and trade him, he'd be the next guy up, and he'd be one of the good ones, one of the better ones. So yeah, Andrés Muñoz is someone to keep an eye on.
All right. On that note, we're gonna move over to Rockies, and it's just there's a lot of interesting, and then there's a lot of like well known. Blackman's falling in drafts, and I don't think for me it's not because of age. I'm not really too concerned about. I know he's older, but I feel like he's the type of guy that might get traded midseason. And I know you can't really project that, but man, it's part of why I want to avoid him, because if he gets traded from Coors, just like anybody else, you leave Coors, it hurts. But other than that, Trevor Story's a first round pick. David Dahl, I'm a little lower on him than most because of the injury history at this point, and he's not stealing that many bases. But Coors, gives him a high average, high, and he's his power guy, so he's not bad. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on Dahl? You think he's top 100, but I think it's more of a fringe. It's not like a guarantee.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to be fading Dahl this next season. I did like him coming into 2019. But, the injury history, I think that 302 – average he put up this last season was probably pretty lucky, considering, how much he strikes out. You look at his, Statcast data, the exit velocity, hard hit percentage. I mean, it's not great. Definitely outperformed that average. His X batting average was .267. He's probably someone I'm going to be fading. I did write in my notes here, kind of a comp, who would I rather have, Dahl or Benintendi? And I think I'm right. I don't know. I think I'm
fading both of them.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one, right? I mean, I just think that I just can't trust Dahl, David Dahl. I mean, health wise, I think I probably would take Benintendi.
That's gonna be a good one. I'm gonna have to look into that one more. I might take Dahl because I'm that low on Benintendi.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy I am really starting to like, and he's a projected starter, so take that for what it's worth, because it's the Rockies and they're going to sign somebody probably, or Ian Desmond will still start. But I'm starting to like Sam Hilliard late in drafts. He offers a power speed combination that goes, like last year he came up for his little cup of coffee,
mm-hmm.
but only stole two bags, hit seven home runs in 77 at bats. But let me pull up his Fangraphs page. I probably should have had that ready, but I'm pretty sure, because I wrote about him a deeper league steel source. 25 years old. Last year was kind of like his breakout in AAA. Now, granted, the ball was juiced, but he has flashed 20-30 upside in the past. He did 20-30 in 2017. He actually did 21-37 in 2017. 2019, he did 35-22 in the minors, came up, hit 7-2. Walk rate is solid. Last year was at 10.3% when he came up. It was at 9.7 in AAA. Always 8.5 or at minimum. K rate, he strikes out a little more than you'd like. It was only at 26.4%, but usually sitting around 28-31% in the minors. But still, heck, with Coors as your home park, it's like 260-270 is always like a solid guarantee, it feels like.
Yeah.
But you can look, he might be a 250 hitter, but that's with 20-20 upside minimum, I feel like, with his skill set. And you can get that at the end of your drafts in mixed leagues and even deep leagues. Heck, even 15-teamers, he's going late. With that being said, man, I got to get myself some more Sam Hilliard. I didn't realize he's a projected starter, but let's be honest. They're going to mess with that.
Oh, yeah. It's so hard to trust the Rockies. I mean, outside of, your top, five or six guys here, just going through the lineup, Blackman, Story, Dahl, Arenado, Murphy, and McMahon. I mean, I feel like those top six are probably a lock. And then after that,
I don't want Murphy.
Neither do I.
And McMahon, he's all right, but it's like I thought I wanted Hampson, but dude, Hampson's having a starter again? Like, come on, this is killing me, man. This is ridiculous.
Right, yeah.
Like, yeah, what are we doing here? Get rid of Murphy. Get rid of Murphy. Let's get rid of Murphy. Move McMahon to first, put Hampson at second, and hit Hilliard in center field, and we're good.
There you go. Exactly.
They're not going to do that. You know what they're going to do? They're going to go sign Dozier. Dozier's going to play second. McMahon's going to go to the outfield. Hilliard and Hampson are going to be off the bench. And I'd rather have – honestly, if this is how it's going to shake out, you're going to see Hampson and Hilliard flip in ADP. Hampson's going to go first now, but if Hilliard actually gets the starting gig, you're going to see them flip, I think. And I think now if you're doing early drafts, grab Hilliard late, and if he holds that starting spot, you're going to be very thankful for that, because go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, we're going to be right back where we were last season with McMahon and Hampson, and except, you know, now with Hilliard. Now, if
we actually have to do our second base rankings, I just saw the thing pop up on my iPad. We have to get started on our second base rankings for fantasy.
Yeah.
And I actually was coming around on Hampson being and I'm still probably going to rank him a little aggressively this early on, but it was between him and Brandon Lowe, both of which offer different skill sets.
Yeah.
And both of which have playing time concerns, but with the fact that Roster Resource already has him as a bench player, makes me lean Brandon Lowe now. Because I was kind of flipping it, because I actually thought Lowe initially. I was like, you know what? Hampson offers that power-speed combo, blah, blah, blah. But now I'm looking at this, and Hampson's not even a projected starter. I want the guy who's at least projected starting and on a strong side of the platoon, you know?
Yeah. Now, see, I'm with you on Hampson, and I actually think, like, I'm going to have quite a bit of Hampson. I'm going to be back on there again. If I told you that he finished the season based on, you know, the perception and how he started, that he finished the season with 8 home runs and 15 steals, I was kind of surprised by that. In the second half, he had 7 home runs, 11 steals with a .284 average. And we know the guy can run. He's got 99 percentile sprint speed. So Hampson, man, I really hope that he wins a starting job.
It's not even about him winning it. It's about, are they going to sign somebody to screw with him again?
Right.
So we're going to see. But that's the thing. The power has never been there in the minors. So how much of it was the juice ball for the power as well? That's my concern with him. He might be closer to a 10 to 15 home run guy, which isn't bad. Maybe 20 because it's cores, but the speed is like 30 plus. Like, we've seen it 2016, 2017, 36, 51. Oh, sorry, 2018 as well with 36 steals there. So stolen bases have never been a question. Last year, if you combine the minors and majors, he stole 22. This is the math. 22. So
yeah, and he's definitely going to hit better than .247.
And especially, yeah, the batting average, the BABIP was low, .322. That's low for somebody like him with his skill set. But I don't want to harp on him too much. We know it's one of those things that we just got to see how the Rockies handle it, which is probably going to be poorly.
Yeah, and now, you know, on the pitching side, there's really no one to mention other than Marquez.
John Gray was surprisingly good. I mean, a lot of people didn't realize that. He was actually not bad last year, if I remember correctly. And this was after, like, I think he figured out something with his sleep or something like that. One of those guys that kind of – he had a 9.0 K per 9. He had a high 3 ERA with a low 4 with a 4.06 FIP. But his indicators were right in line. XFIP was .389. Sierra was .435, a little high, but not bad for a course pitcher. A guy I would stream, him, Marquez, and that's about it, are guys I would stream outside of cores, or a really, really, really good cores matchup, maybe. So they're better in daily leagues, but in weekly leagues, I don't want them really.
Yeah, I mean, I have Marquez down as like maybe like a no better than like an SP3 with upside.
Yeah, same thing with John Gray, though, and John Gray can get later, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to be able to get John Gray much later.
And again, daily leagues, streaming options on the road for sure. Maybe, like, if you get the Giants or the Marlins at home, it's even the bad teams can hurt them in Coors, because Coors is undefeated. There's a reason why I fade Coors pitchers, but you're getting those guys. And Marquez actually turned it up in the second half and was actually doing better again on the road. His home road splits were notably different. He's going to be a solid value this year, I think. He's the one to definitely target, but John Gray is not somebody to sleep on. Just grab him late, stream him. I really would stream him on the road. I would own him, and as long as I can, because obviously daily leagues, the shallower the format, I won't own him. But he will be a solid streamer next year, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and you know what? John Gray's actually produced better at home than on the road.
Oh, really? I didn't even look at his splits. I just assumed it was. I always assumed the road splits are better with Coors pitchers.
Yeah, it's weird. He's kind of always been like that. He has a career 4.36 ERA at home and a career 4.56 ERA away from Coors. So, I mean, and then like last year too, in Coors, he had a 3.46 ERA and then 4.22 on the road.
Yeah, we can. Okay, we're moving on from them. Like,
we can move on. Basically, yeah. Those are really the only two interesting.
What about the closer situation? I guess I forgot to mention that. I don't know if that's really worth mentioning because I feel like I know it's not Wade Davis. Is not Ottavino. That's obviously
no. It was Jairo Diaz. Oberg. Unfortunately, man, he had a bad injury scare. I want to say it was like a blood clot or blood. I think blood condition. That shut him down, and it was Jairo Diaz that was getting the save opportunities later in the season. But that's another situation that's going to be, you know, up in the air.
Gotcha. All right, Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's kind of gotta speed this up a little bit. Let's start with the pitching, dude. There's a lot here again. Mostly Zach Gallen and Luke Weaver. Robbie Ray's okay. He kind of is who he is, high K guy, but the ratios are always going to hurt you a little bit. But I like Weaver and Gallen a lot this year. And I think Gallen's another one, like Lamet, just kind of, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But Gallen's definitely, he's being ranked aggressively, rightfully so. And Weaver's being slept on. He's a sleeper.
Yeah, I really like Weaver. You know, he made some really great improvements this last season. It was so unfortunate. I was watching the game where it was against my Giants. Where he just started shaking his arm, and you could see like, oh no, like it's the forearm. You could see the trouble there. But I had really liked the improvements that he was making.
And that's the concern because he was a strain in that arm. So it's like, will he end up going under the knife this year type of thing? But the price is built in. You're getting him late. He is a sleeper in every aspect. He's going late. You can get him late as a SP5 type of guy. And if he doesn't work out, drop him, cut him, whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of Luke Weaver this next season. And
we can't draft together.
No, probably not. No, because Weaver. I like Gallen as well. I really do. But I'm probably going to be just waiting and getting Weaver.
I'm priced out on Gallen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Robbie Ray, like you said, he's always like kind of that fringe, like top 30 SP, top, you know, maybe as high as top 25. Always like has a surprisingly good year, you know, here and there.
You know who I'm completely fading? I was fading him last year, and somehow, even with the second half being terrible, his counting stats never dipped. Eduardo Escobar. I'm so down on him. Everything indicated that it was a fluky year, and I was like, I actually remember talking. I think I was tweeting about it with somebody on Twitter about It was midseason. It was the discussion was legitimately Escobar, Eduardo Escobar, or back to our guy Jose Ramirez, and I literally said at the end of the season, because both had complete opposite first halves. Mm-hmm. I said both of them can finish the season hitting 250. It's just completely different stories how they get there, and I think it was like I was pretty spot on about that. And the thing about Escobar is he did so bad in his peripherals in the second half. He still managed to put up such good counting stats that people don't realize that he's a huge bust for me. Like, I'm gonna fade him everywhere. If that ball is not juiced even the slightest bit, I mean, I feel like he's the one that's gonna fall on his face the most on this team and one of the bigger. But I don't know where he's going in drafts. I think he's actually not priced too expensively, but I want nothing to do with him. I'm fading him hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Escobar is someone that's really not on my radar. He's a fade.
It does hurt. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. You're going to finish your thoughts on Escobar?
No, I was going to say it kills me to see Carson Kelly hitting eighth, but the team is actually solid ahead of him. So I just, you know me, I love Carson Kelly. So
yeah. Yeah. I know. I know you're high on Kelly. Now, how do you feel about Ketel Marte? Are you buying it? Are you buying that breakout?
I think the hit tool's always been there. I think he's a, mm-hmm. I just think the power's gonna come down. I think he's a regression candidate, but not a bust. I don't know if I'm gonna take him. I don't know if I'm gonna take him where he's going in drafts. So it's hard for me. It's like maybe I am calling him a bust without trying to call him a bust. I think he's solid. I just don't think – I think last year might have been, like, that year for him, you know? The sprint speed is down, but everything else, I mean, he's one of those swing change guys, and they put the ball in the air more, and the production followed. I think some of the home runs will come down a little bit, but I think he's still going to hit for a solid average, be able to steal about 10 bags and hit about 20 to 25 home runs. I think that's what you can expect with close to a 280 to 300 average. Solid, but that's still regression compared to last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you consider the second base landscape, he's going to be right up there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. He gains value because of that positional flexibility because he's outfield eligible too. But he is second base eligible. He played enough games.
Let's see here.
That's probably something we should definitely. I know.
I want to say he did. Let's see. Second base. Yeah, actually, 74 games at second.
Oh, sweet! I didn't realize he played so many. Cool. Good. Yeah. No, that definitely adds to his value. I just have a hard. See, that's the thing. I feel like he's getting just like other players playing second. Second base people are getting boosted because of that, and I don't like paying up for positional. I don't look at positional scarcity too much. Usually, it might be a difference maker. Like, if I think Ketel Marte's at a good value, like, if he falls to a good value, and it's him versus somebody else, I'm going to lean him if I'm really that torn between them because of – but I don't ever go out of my way to draft somebody early based on positions. That's why I moved Javi Baez down a lot, too, so.
Yeah.
He was high for me, but then I realized take away second base, I'm not a huge fan of his, and he's falling to a good value. He's actually becoming a good value in drafts, too, but that's not – we're not talking about the Cubs. We're talking about the Diamondbacks.
Just to add a quick note on Marte, depending on your platform, he did play 10 games at second base. So, you know, somewhere like Yahoo, he's going to have that second base, shortstop, outfield, you know, triple eligibility.
Ooh, that's very, very intriguing. Yeah, it definitely adds to his value in 15 teamers where that's where I'm deeper leagues like that. I'm more likely to value multi-positional eligibility for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one
Sousa's coming back.
Oh, Sousa. Yeah. I'm,
power, some speed, meh, batting average like 240, 250 is what it is. That's just who he is. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not going to have any Sousa.
Yeah, probably not me either.
Yeah, no, another guy I have down here as like a late steal source is Josh Rojas.
Yeah, he's gaining some helium too, and I think it's Alex Chamberlain that's all over him.
Mm.
I'm seeing his name float all over Twitter. That's all. I'm just... I don't know. I don't know much about him. I honestly didn't own a lot of shares. I know he's 25 years old. Sprint speed is in the 77th percentile. But that's about all I know about him. I don't really know. Do you know more about him than I do? Did you look into him a little bit?
No, I did. I do know that he came from the Astros organization. And
they always do that.
Right.
Look, JD Davis, Rojas. Like they. Oh, it's an embarrassment of riches. Like they just give these guys away because they have no room for them.
Right, yeah. So he went over to the Diamondbacks in the Zach Greinke deal. Did steal 19 bases in AAA last season with the Astros.
I like his walks and K rates. Like I like that profile. You know, I'm a sucker for that. And the batting average was there. The walks and K rates were there. Oh man, I like him now.
Right, yeah. So he's got a good profile here with the strikeout and walk rates. So you're looking at potentially pretty good average, and then with 15 or so. Steals, that's what Steamer has him for. I think that looks pretty good. Pretty good late steal source there.
Oh, he's a sleeper. I'm putting him on my list now. I'm not kidding. As we're talking, he's adding to my list because I'm never too above like hearing what other people have to say. And I have never looked into Rojas. And now that like literally just a quick look, that's all I needed to because of his draft value, his price, you know?
Yeah, he's someone similar to someone like Mauricio Dubon, who we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I'd rather have Rojas. I think Rojas has a better profile. And he actually has more speed and potential, but less pop potential.
Right, less pop, yeah. A little less power. I think I'm going to side with my guy in Dubon. But yeah, Rojas is similar.
David Peralta, same thing as Sousa. I mean, I think I'd rather have Peralta, obviously, but it's just another guy. Batting average, solid batting average, good power, nothing else. I mean, and obviously RBI potential because he's hitting fourth. But the guy I like right behind him is Christian Walker. I'm hoping he doesn't platoon too much, but I mean, you get some steals, you get some power. I think, and a lot of the metrics and peripherals back him up a little for the most part.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the concern for me is, the platoon. We'll see where they put Jake Lamb. Or I'm sorry, is Jake Lamb?
He's on the bench.
Right, he's on the bench, right, yeah.
But doesn't he hit lefties really well?
No, he crushes righties.
It's righties.
It's the other way around.
So he should be a starter then, because then you would think he would be starting, because righties, you face more righties than you do lefties, you know?
Yeah, so that's the one concern I have is, you know, if they platoon Lamb and Walker, what happens to Walker's playing time?
I mean, I know that was a concern last year at one point, but then Walker separated himself and kind of played more, if I remember correctly. Like, I'm looking at splits now, and Walker actually also hit better versus righties last season. So there's an issue there, you know? If both of them hit better versus righties, I guess Walker hitting a better versus lefties was enough of a difference maker to give him the full-time spot, maybe? That's one thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Because I'm just looking – I just looked at their splits real quick, and you can't have two guys – playing full time for against righties. So
yeah, and then moving on from the hitters here, we've kind of touched on the pitchers. One Diamondback who I'm probably going to have on a lot of my teams is Archie Bradley. He's going to be closing for the Diamondbacks, and he was actually one of the best relievers in the second half of the season. He had a 1.71 ERA. And then once they moved on from Greg Holland, he picked up 18 saves. And then, you know, had a good strikeout rate. Had, you know, like I said, one of the best relievers in all of baseball in the second half. I think he's maybe going to go a little under the radar, going to be one of those relievers in the middle tier. Personally, I never draft like one of the top relievers. Like I never draft relievers that high. Archie Bradley's going to be going somewhere where I'm going to be comfortable taking my first RP, and yeah, he's going to be someone I target a lot.
Yeah, and we actually do a whole relief pitcher pod, so we're definitely going to touch on not just ranks but like strategy, because that's a big thing for a lot of people. And I don't go after the top tier closers. So again, we have that one draft together for sure, and that might be all I want to draft with you. I'm looking over at the Dodgers one. This is the final team, and I think we did pretty good time on that team. I just want to start right with the pitchers again. Kershaw, we know who he is. Burt Bueller, obviously, I think we all agree that Bueller above Kershaw at this point now.
Yeah.
After that, it gets interesting. Urias, he should be starting this year, and I think it's almost like prospect fatigue. People are so tired of him, but he's like 23 years old, I think. He's still like a kid, man. He's still young.
Yeah, he's still really young. 23 years old, and I have him written down here too as a big time sleeper. You look at his Statcast page, and everything is off the charts. You see red everywhere. So, I mean, if he gets those innings, if he gets those starts, he could definitely pay off.
I am curious to see what they do with the innings, because he only pitched 79 last year. Sorry, technically 81.2, because he had two innings in high A. But I'm just – you know how they are. He might, 140, 150, maybe 160, and then they'll cap him, put him back in the pen. They have Ross Stripling. They have Gonsolin. You know who they're missing? Where the heck is Dustin May?
Dustin May, right, yeah.
Dustin May over Gonsolin. Come on, Dodgers, don't let me down. Because Gonsolin's not bad. We know Stripling's decent. Like, I think any – I want – Where's Ryu? Is Ryu not? Is he a free agent? Like, I don't remember Ryu. Where's Ryu?
He's a free agent.
That's what I thought. Okay, I thought so. I was just making sure, because I was like maybe he's on the injured list or something on this page, but just making sure. Okay, so and the Dodgers don't have any reason to re-sign him. They have. Wait, where's Maeda? Maeda's free agent too?
No, they have him in the bullpen.
Oh yeah, there he is. Okay, I'm all thrown off. So yeah, this goes to show you we don't know. Maeda could easily fight for a spot in the starting rotation again. Gonsolin showed flashes. I know Stripling's kind of like maybe everybody was a year early on Stripling. Remember last year he was getting drafted pretty aggressively, you know, as a starter and didn't start pretty much most of the year.
But right,
solid,
yeah.
Solid, but solid numbers. I mean, I think he's another sleeper. I think I want a piece of this. I like the Dodgers starting rotation. I like how they handle their pitcher. I don't like how they handle the pitchers because they all these breaks, but I want Stripling. I want Urias. I don't really want Gonsolin, but I want May. I think May will end up winning a job. And when you look at their hitters, where the heck is Gavin Lux? Why is Lux not? Where's Lux at? Like, what's going on? But then you look, where can they fit Lux?
Right. So they got Turner at third base. They got Max Muncy at second. No, I think he's got one more year.
And I wonder, because there are talks about what's his face from the Indians. Like, there was already talks about
Lindor
coming over, which would push Seager to what, second base or third base? Maybe Turner. Yeah, he has one more year, and it's a pretty big salary too. So you can't it's gonna be hard. That would be hard to move. They have to eat the salary, but I just don't see Lux should start, but I don't see a spot for him to start.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you got AJ Pollock in the outfield, who they paid last year. You got Jock Peterson, Alex Verdugo. You got Cody Bellinger at first base. So yeah, it's hard to see where they're gonna fit Lux in. Yeah, absolutely loaded. Yeah, who knows? Maybe they do move some of these pieces for like a Francisco Lindor.
That's what I'm wondering. If Lindor is coming, if they get Lindor, you got to think Lux is probably part of that package.
It could be, yeah, absolutely.
Because where else? I mean, Seager, I would hope Indians know better at Seager. Maybe Seager's better in real life, but you don't take on Seager with his injury history and the lackluster. He hasn't really hit that. He never really hit that potential on the offensive side either. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they make room for Lux. Because Lux, he's being drafted as a sleeper in a lot of leagues. And I like him. But as of right now, as the roster currently stands, there's not an everyday spot for him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I know he did, he didn't perform particularly well in his limited time, with the Dodgers last season.
I'm not concerned.
So even in that small sample, he did have an expected batting average of .288. I think his actual batting average was actually down in, like, .250s. But, we know how talented he is. I'm hoping that he's playing, whether it's with the Dodgers or if it's every day with the Indians. We know how talented he is.
I'm just looking at this team. I think Max Muncy, he's a solid value in drafts. Where you're getting him, it's like the price is right on him. He'll probably make that podcast when we have it. He's a solid multi-positional eligible guy. .250-ish average, but big power potential. Great in OBP leagues, or I should say better anyway.
Right.
Jock Peterson. See, that's the thing. But Jock Peterson, he's a 30 home run guy, but it's just he leads off and he's a platoon. Strong side of a platoon. So his value remains in daily leagues and for power. Pollock is a draft day, a solid value, a fifth outfield type, so a little bit of power speed. I think he's okay. I don't mind taking him because his draft price is great. He's like outside the top 200, I think, or close. Probably not that late, but pretty close. He's probably going 150-ish, 175-ish. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really know. It's like I'm trying to – it's just this team is so good. I'm trying to
– Right. So just going back to your point on Muncy, he's going to be a guy that, like, I'm perfectly fine drafting at first base, waiting, so we still haven't – yeah, or even – he's going to be first base eligible. Second base, obviously, how shallow that is. He'll be great there. But, even first base, I wouldn't really mind, especially in points leagues, because, that walk rate is great, 15.3% walk rate. So he's going to have, great OBP, a lot of pop. So in points leagues in particular, I really like Muncy. He was only one of 14 players with 35 home runs, 95 runs, 95 RBI, and that elite walk rate. So, I mean, he's definitely someone, like I said, in points leagues that I like. Peterson, I mean, you kind of know what you're getting, 250, 30 home runs. Like you said, better in daily leagues.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, yeah, like this lineup is just stacked. Then you look at catcher Will Smith,
all the way at the bottom.
Yeah, top catcher, potential. Alex Verdugo is probably like a safe outfielder three type. Justin Turner, everything's kind of checking out the same with Justin Turner when you look at the peripherals.
Yeah, he's corner infield. I mean, he's a starting third baseman. Third base is deep. He's solid, and you're gonna get good. He's a good value because of his position. He falls because of age and position and health, and he's gonna be a good value.
Like it's just, the age and the health is the major concerns, but I mean, Steamer has him still for a .280 average and 26 home runs, and
yeah.
I mean that's great for if you can get him at like a corner infield spot. I mean that's gonna be absolutely
exactly. And that's pretty, I mean, I can tell you right now, I don't want Kenley Jansen. He, all his stuff like regressed last year, and I'm good. Like, I don't really want him. I mean, I don't have to dig in that deep to him. I just, he's praised his name alone, and obviously team context, he will get the saves, but I just, they're not going to be pretty. I don't think, I feel like he could be replaced this year. Maybe I'm too pessimistic. I don't know.
I mean, I still think that he's probably going to be like a, maybe like a low end RP1, like fringe top 10, top 12 still. But yeah, I'm not going to have him anywhere, but I think that's probably what he's going to be. I don't think he's going to lose the job, but yeah, that's a hard one to pin down.
Maybe Maeda can take it.
Yeah, we did see that. We did see, you know, late in the season, other relievers, including Urias, get, you know, some save opportunities.
You better watch out. Keeper Ruiz is coming for Will Smith's spot, man. Dude, this team is just another team. They need to make a trade. Another team littered with talent throughout their minor league system, too. So, I think that's going to do it, though, man. We did good. We talked about a lot of stuff. It might be a pretty long pod. I'm curious to see how it edits out. But,
yeah.
At the end of the day, guys, this is the NL West, and we covered a whole bunch of information. Definitely prefer this. I mean, it's a little longer, but I definitely prefer this compared to each team individually. Especially,
yeah, I agree.
We have so much information to cover otherwise for off-season content. So, again, that's going to do it, guys. I'm Mike. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. I was joined by George today. You can follow him on Twitter at JMontanez90. We write for Fantrax, so we're always you can follow our work over at Fantrax HQ, and or just, again, on Twitter. You'll see it. We post it. The podcast, you can find us on Twitter as well and Instagram at BasesLoadedPod. And we appreciate you guys listening. We look forward to being with you guys all off season, coming into the season and going and beyond, man. We'll be here. So, again, guys, we'll talk to you soon.